are. I'll just bring you up to speed very quickly for those that may be out of the loop. As you know, Israel is currently at war with Hamas, which is the paramilitary group that runs the Gaza Strip in the southwest of Israel. And this all started not this past Saturday, but the Saturday before that, when 3,000 Hamas militants invaded Israel. They killed 1,600 people. Israel quickly drove them back across the border and secured their homeland. Benjamin Netanyahu, who is facing widespread protests and opposition, was able to form a unity government to fight the war. And they've been preparing a ground invasion of the Gaza Strip. They've called up 360,000 reserve troops, and they have been mobilizing to prepare for a ground invasion there, which would be the biggest ground invasion Israel's conducted since 2006. In the meantime, they've been bombing the Gaza Strip daily. They have completely blockaded the region. It's home to 2 million people. It's very small. And they have cut off all water, food, medical supplies, fuel. So this blockade has lasted now over a week. On Thursday, Israel gave the order for North Gaza, which is home to 1 million people, to evacuate in 24 hours. They told a million people they have 24 hours to leave. And the United States, the United Nations, the European Union called Israel out and said that's not really possible. And so Israel delayed, and they said that there would be a longer time period for the Palestinians to evacuate. Then on Friday, there was an intense rainfall, and Israel was forced to delay their ground offensive even further. And that brings us to today. We're still on the cusp. We're on the brink of war here. Some other key details. Since last week, the United States has deployed a carrier strike group to the Eastern Mediterranean. They've sent another aircraft carrier to the region from the Persian Gulf. At the same time, Iran, which is Israel's primary foe in the region, has threatened that their proxies throughout the Middle East in Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, and Yemen may preemptively attack Israel if the bombing against Gaza doesn't stop. And the big threat, as I've talked about throughout last week, and this is our eyes on the prize, is whether or not this conflict will expand from a local conflict between Hamas, which is relatively small and primitive and ill-equipped against Israel, whether this local conflict will expand then to a regional conflict between Iran and Israel, and whether that regional conflict will then expand into a global conflict, a confrontation between the United States and potentially Russia and China, with the United States backing Israel and Russia and China backing Iran. So that's the big picture. I want to go through the developments today. And the first thing I want to talk about is the planned Israeli offensive. So like I said, we're still, and this was the, if you watched the show last week, you know, this is what we're waiting for. We're all waiting to see what Israel's going to do, because Israel hasn't really properly responded. They have secured their homeland against the invaders. So all the invaders have been sent back. Again, they've instituted the blockade and they've been bombing Gaza. But they haven't actually invaded the Gaza Strip just yet. And this is what that's going to look like. This is a report. This is from antiwar.com. It says, quote, an Israeli military spokesman said on Sunday that Israeli troops are in formation to strike Gaza City in the northern Gaza Strip as Israel is expected to launch a ground incursion into the besieged enclave. The New York Times reported on Saturday that Israel's plan is to invade and capture Gaza City, an attempt to wipe out Hamas leadership. The operation is expected to involve tens of thousands of troops and will be Israel's largest ground incursion since at least 2006, when it invaded Lebanon. Besides sending in infantry, the incursion will also include tanks, commandos, and mine sappers. The force will receive support from Israeli warplanes, attack helicopters, and artillery fired from land and sea. The U.S. is strongly backing Israel as it is preparing to invade Gaza and launching relentless airstrikes on the enclave. The Israeli incursion of Gaza is expected to lead to months of brutal urban warfare in one of the most densely populated places in the world. Israel's long-term plans and whether it would eventually withdraw from Gaza City if it's successfully captured are unclear. So I talked a little bit about this last week, but this is the game plan here. This is Israel's perspective. So in case you don't know the geography super well, we're talking about a region which is called Palestine, and it contains a Jewish state with its capital in Jerusalem, and that is most of the land. The entire region is called Palestine. It's west of the Jordan River, north of the Sinai, south of Lebanon, and Israel, the Jewish state, controls most of it. Palestine, which is an Arab Muslim territory, is divided in two parts. You have the Gaza Strip, which is a very tiny stretch of land in the southwest, and the West Bank, which is in the east. So Israel's plan here is effectively to, I think, militarily occupy the entire Gaza Strip. They want to bring the entire Gaza Strip under Jewish control. And so like we talked about last week, they're evacuating the northern half of Gaza, which is home to 1.1 million people. And the purpose of the evacuation is because they are going to invade that part first. They're going to totally bomb and level that part of the territory, presumably kill everybody inside. And then once they've taken that part, they're going to move south. They're going to go into northern Gaza. They're going to take Gaza City. It's going to be a long, brutal counterinsurgency because it's very densely populated and Hamas has tunnels underneath the city. So this is going to be a protracted military campaign. But again, the goal is to secure that part of the region and to drive everybody out of it. So this is a form of ethnic cleansing. This is not just a surgical operation where they go in and they kill the militants. It's not regime change where they topple the government. Their goal is to drive everybody out. 400,000 people have already evacuated this northern part, and they have no expectation of returning. Because as we speak, Israel is destroying all the buildings there. And this is before the invasion even starts. They're going to go in there, they are going to utterly destroy everything, and this is why they keep talking about turning it into a parking lot. They're going to level everything so that there's no home even for these people to come back to. The 400,000 out of 1.1 million that have already fled, they know they're never coming back. There's not going to be a home standing that they could return to. They're going to evacuate more people, and the people that don't get evacuated are going to get utterly annihilated in a very long, protracted counterinsurgency, like this article says, urban warfare by the IDF. Artillery, bombings, tanks, infantry, all of it. Once they've secured Gaza City and North Gaza, they're going to move south. And the people that have fled south are going to have to flee again. And the 1 million plus all the refugees from North Gaza are going to be driven into the Sinai Peninsula, which belongs to Egypt, or they're going to be forced out as refugees some other place, or they're going to be killed. But that appears to be the goal here, is to go into North Gaza, again, evacuate everybody, kill all that remains, bulldoze all the buildings, then they're going to do the rest to the other half. And the people that stay will be killed, and the people that don't stay, of course, they'll flee as refugees. And they'll either go across the border into the Sinai, where there's already a lot of Palestinian refugees, or they'll go someplace else. And this is the definition, one, of collective punishment, because they are inflicting a punishment against an entire people for the actions of the government. And they even say that. This is the Israeli president. This is from, I think this is from Haaretz. It says, Israeli President Isaac Herzog said Friday that civilians in Gaza bear responsibility for the Hamas attack on southern Israel. He said, quote, it is an entire nation that is responsible. It is not true, this rhetoric about civilians not being aware, not involved. It's absolutely not true. They could have risen up. They could have fought against the evil regime which took over Gaza in a coup. So Israel, contrary to what people are saying, where they say, well, Israel has to kill thousands of civilians because they're being used as human shields. No, they're openly saying it's collective punishment. They're openly saying we're going to kill everyone because 2 million people are responsible for what 3,000 Hamas fighters did. 3,000 Hamas fighters invaded Israel. A fraction of that committed atrocities, which there's very little documentation of. So now Israel's president is saying, as a consequence, we hold 2 million people accountable, children, women, they're all accountable. We're going to kill them all. We're going to ethnically cleanse them. So that's the definition of collective punishment, which is like a war crime, that they're going to inflict a brutal blockade and murder against people that are either children or civilians. They had nothing to do with the attack last week. Two, it's ethnic cleansing by definition, because they're not just, as I said before, pursuing a change in regime. It's not a surgical strike on the fighters that were responsible for the attack last week. It's not even a war. It is a war, but it's more than that. The goal here is not just to militarily conquer Hamas. The goal is to occupy this territory and remove everyone that lives there from the place and to send them as refugees all around the world so that they don't live on their territory anymore. That's ethnic cleansing. And it's also a genocide, because it's not just that the people are going to leave, but presumably there's going to be tens, potentially hundreds of thousands of casualties, people that are going to be killed for no reason other than that they are Palestinians. And as I said last week, that's a Gaza genocide. It's inhumane, it's brutal, it's wrong, it should be opposed. And not only that, but this is going to entirely change the landscape of the Middle East, because what this does is it echoes the initial act of evil that Israel was founded upon 70 years ago. For those that don't know, the reason that all the Muslims hate Israel and the whole Muslim world hates Israel, the reason the Palestinians, including Hamas, hates Israel, is because Israel did the same thing in 1948. After the Jews settled Palestine for the first 50 years of the last century, they declared their independence in 1948, and they sent their military out to drive Palestinians from their homes. And hundreds of thousands of Palestinians were removed from their homes, sent as refugees into Jordan, into the Sinai, into the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, Lebanon. There were many massacres. Many civilians were killed. And you might have heard of this. This is called the Nakba, or the catastrophe in Arabic. And ever since then, there has been bad blood between the Arabs and the Jews, because the Jews drove the Palestinians out of their lands. And that's where all these groups come from, by the way. Hamas and the people in Gaza, they all descend, the majority of them, descend from refugees who fled from Israel in the 1948 war, in the Nakba. Hezbollah in Lebanon, same thing. Hezbollah is comprised of Palestinian fighters who were kicked out of Jordan in the Jordanian Civil War in 67. And they were in Jordan because they fled from Palestine during the Nakba. And all the animosity against Israel from the surrounding Arab states, such as Egypt, Syria, Lebanon, among others, same thing in 48, 56, 67, 73, it all goes back to the Nakba. And they're redoing that in the same way that in 1948, they displaced hundreds of thousands of Palestinians to build their state in a brutal fashion with massacres and civilian casualties. They're doing that again with the Gaza Strip. And it comes at a very interesting time because, as we talked about last week, the United States just began to pursue a strategy where we tried to get all the Arab states to begin this rapprochement with Israel. Under the Abraham Accords, the Donald Trump administration tried to get the Gulf countries, such as the Emirates, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, in addition to Morocco, Sudan, among others, tried to get all these countries to normalize ties with Israel in exchange for certain benefits that the United States would provide. And that's something that was continued under the Biden administration. So in other words, just 2 weeks ago, we were heading towards a situation where virtually the entire Arab world would have normalized ties with Israel, diplomatic recognition, normal trade, and other bilateral relationships, and they would form a pro-Israel, pro-United States bloc against the China-Russia-backed Iran and Syria. That's where we were 2 weeks ago. But if this offensive happens, it seems that all of that diplomacy will be out the window. We may even go back to before the Camp David Accords in 1978 when Egypt made peace with Israel. And it may be such that this second Nakba, this Gaza genocide, which would constitute a second Nakba, a second ethnic cleansing, it may restart the whole process. And although unthinkable now, it may unite the entire Muslim world against Israel, which we've seen evidence for already with the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman calling the Iranian foreign minister last week. It could be the case that Egypt, Syria, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Iraq may all be once again on the same side against Israel as they were for the as they will be for the first time since before 1978, since before the Carter administration, which is pretty unbelievable. But that's what we're talking about here. So this may be a catastrophic strategic blunder, not just for Israel, but also for the United States, because consider that if Israel, with its genocide of Gaza, if they unite the entire Muslim world against Israel, guess who they've also united the Muslim world against? They've also united the entire Muslim world against the United States. Because all the Muslims know that the United States is Israel's biggest patron. And what's more, in this current crisis, it is because of U.S. military support. If Israel carries out the genocide in Gaza, it will only have been with the support of the United States military. That's why there's two aircraft carriers in the region. That's why Biden is making the trip out, to all but guarantee that Israel can carry this genocide out without outside interference from Iran or Saudi Arabia or Egypt or Turkey. And this comes at a very important time because, as we've talked about over the last year, since the war in Ukraine, there have been serious defections from the U.S. orbit. Countries that have been inside the United States pocket for decades are now drifting further towards China and Russia. So we talked about since the war in Ukraine broke out that countries like Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, which again, they've been U.S. allies for decades, Saudi Arabia going back to World War II, Egypt going back to Anwar Sadat in the 70s, they have applied to join the BRICS coalition, which is Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, whose goal is to create a global system as an alternative to the United States-led system. So there's this diplomatic revolution underway where the United States is losing all its allies to Russia and China, or at the minimum, allies that we have invested heavily in are starting to weigh both options. Countries like Saudi Arabia have said, yeah, we'll see what China has to offer too. We'll take a little Belt and Road money. We'll take money from the U.S. They want to be wooed back over. Same thing with Egypt. And so point being, this is a very precarious time for the United States. The Biden administration has been trying desperately to bring nations like Saudi Arabia, Egypt, back into the fold. If Israel commits a genocide against Gaza, it's going to totally alienate Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan. It would have to. It would have to because the Muslims in these countries would literally overthrow their governments if the governments are normalizing ties with a Jewish state that is genociding Muslims in Gaza. So not only is there a scenario where Saudi Arabia and Egypt and Jordan and Syria, Iran and Turkey are all working together against Israel, They're also working with China and Russia against the United States. It only makes it more likely that they fall into the arms of the opposition bloc. This is part of a very bad situation because it's not just this region, but it's the whole world which is feeling the same way. Central and South America are drifting away. Europe is drifting away. Africa is drifting away. And now it seems the whole Middle East is going to be united against America and our closest ally, Israel, because they're committing a genocide. And here's the irony. We have gone out there in the war in Ukraine, and we went out there in Iraq, and we said that we are entitled, America is entitled to have hegemony over the whole world because we're good. And the alternative is evil. We went out there and said, well, we can kill Saddam Hussein because we're a democracy. We're the free world. We're liberating those people. And we need to stand up to Putin because he's a war criminal and a dictator. And we have to stand up to China because they're a fascist state. And China and Russia as a coalition, they represent autocracy. And when they spread their tentacles, they're spreading the tentacles of tyranny around the world. We stand up to them. We're defending freedom and human rights and liberty. And the grand hypocrisy of what we're doing in Israel, as we're losing all our allies, is we're going out there and we're defending the bad guys. We're putting an aircraft carrier there. And while we're fighting in Ukraine, saying that we're standing up to a war criminal and we're fighting for democracy, we're in the Eastern Mediterranean making sure that Netanyahu, who is a criminal, who's currently under investigation by his own government, can go and carry out a genocide against a nation of children. Because that's what it is. Gaza is 50% under the age of 18. 40% under the age of 16. So we're going over there to make sure that Netanyahu, who is a literal criminal and a dictator, can go in and commit a genocide against a nation of effectively children. While we tell the whole world, you know, that we're the good guys, we need to lead because we're the good guys. It's a hard sell. And so between the support of feminism and gay rights and our hypocrisy on supporting regime change and blowing up countries like Libya, and now this, in addition to our economic and military weakness, American power is at a breaking point in the world. Between the hypocrisy, again, the weakness, its crimes, it's at a breaking point. And so, as I said last week, this is not chapter 7 of Israel-Palestine. This is chapter 2. Chapter 1 being Russia-Ukraine, of a diplomatic revolution that's underway, which is the end of the American-led order. And it's not the first chapter, it's not the last chapter. It was Russia-Ukraine, now it's Israel-Palestine. It's going to be an Azeri-Armenian war. Azerbaijan is saying they will invade southern Armenia to secure this corridor between east and west Azerbaijan. It's going to be Taiwan, it's going to be Niger. This is an age of disorder. This is a transitional stage as we transition out of an American-led order to a multipolar world order. And as a new equilibrium, as a new stasis is achieved, there are going to be wars along these fault lines. You're going to be able to, and this is my prediction, screenshot this, in 5 years, you're going to be able to pull up a map of the world and put a little data point on every war that has happened. Russia, Ukraine, Armenia, Azerbaijan, whether that's Nagorno-Karabakh or a new one, Israel, Palestine, Niger, and you're going to be able to draw a line. And you're literally going to be able to draw a line and show the new borders of the multipolar world. You know, 8 years ago, you could draw it around the Baltic states and around Ukraine and around Georgia, and you could circumscribe Russia and China basically to their borders, with some exceptions. In other words, you can circumscribe and contain Russia within a border that includes like Russia, Belarus, Kazakhstan, China, and that's it. That's all that they're able to project power within. In 5 to 10 years, you're going to draw a new line, and it's going to encompass most of the Middle East. It's going to encompass this newly annexed land in Ukraine. It may include Taiwan. It's going to include an expanded Azerbaijan. But the borders are being changed here. And so anyway, that's the geopolitical significance of what Israel is doing. Now, the good news is they may not necessarily be able to do that because Iran is here to save the day. And so Iran, which is supposed to be the great enemy, you know, that we all are supposed to hate, thankfully, the foreign minister of Iran says that they will not allow the genocide to go forward. And Iran has said that they will preemptively attack Israel through its proxies if the bombing doesn't stop immediately. And so for those that don't know, over the last 10 or so years, Iran has been building up its military power throughout the Middle East. Syria has been in a civil war since 2011, and Bashar al-Assad, the president of Syria, is a close ally of Iran. So Iran has been propping up the Assad regime in Syria, and Iran has been supporting military bases and arms depots in Syrian territory. In Lebanon, Iran has been supporting Hezbollah, which now is estimated to have 100,000 fighters, 150,000 missiles, and they've been supplying Hezbollah through Syria. Iran has also been sponsoring Shiite militias in Iraq in the wake of Saddam Hussein and the power vacuum that was created by his departure. Iran has gone in and sponsored what are called the Popular Mobilization Front, or Popular Mobilization Forces, which are a network of about 100,000 Shiite fighters organized in these militias in Iraq. Iran's also been sponsoring a group called the Houthis, which are rebels in Yemen, and the Shiites in Saudi Arabia. So Iran says that if Israel keeps bombing Gaza, if there's no end to the bombing or the blockade, then Israel will be attacked on a number of new fronts, potentially, like I said, these popular mobilization forces in Iraq going west, Hezbollah invading Israel on its northern border, they'd be moving south, and potentially the Houthis coming into the conflict as well. Iran says they won't directly get involved, but they will use what they're calling the axis of resistance to intervene against Israel. And that is what sets the stage for the American involvement. So this is a sort of nesting conflict. And you could see, it's sort of like World War I. You could see how one tripwire sets off a chain reaction because everything affects everything. So Israel is responding to Hamas. Iran is responding to Israel. And the United States is responding to Iran. So I'll read this part about Iran, and then we'll get into America. So this is the foreign minister. It says, quote, Iran's foreign minister warned on Monday that a regional network of militias known in parts of the Middle East as the Axis of Resistance would open multiple fronts against Israel if its attacks continued to kill civilians in Gaza. He met the top political officials of Hamas in Doha, the leader of Hezbollah in Beirut, and President Bashar al-Assad of Syria in Damascus. In the interview, he said that in those meetings, the leader of what is regionally called the resistance told him that their hands are on the trigger and said that preemptive action was possible in the coming few hours because those leaders would naturally not allow the Zionist regime to do whatever it wants in Gaza. Israel's military said it would evacuate people who live within 2 kilometers of the border with Lebanon. Clashes have broken out there in recent days between Israel and Hezbollah, with both sides trading fire across the border. The United States has sought to head off any expansion of the war by sending messages through diplomatic intermediaries in Qatar, Oman, and China to warn Iran against entering the conflict and to stress that Washington is not seeking a war with Tehran. So this is, the stage is set, the table is set here. Hamas, which is small. Hamas is not really a big deal militarily, and the Gaza Strip is very small. It's not, it's logistically challenging, but it's not strategically threatening to Israel. So Israel is just bullying this little guy. They're They're blockading them. They're bombing them into submission. They're going to go in and kill them all. And so Iran says, hey, don't pick on my little brother. Otherwise, big brother's getting involved. So Iran says that they will send in Hezbollah, which Israel is worried about. Some say, although it's been disputed, that Israel really lost a war against Hezbollah in Lebanon in 2006, which is the only war that they've really lost since 1948. And Hezbollah, they're worried about because Hezbollah is bigger. It's a serious army. They say it's the biggest army in the world that doesn't belong to a state. And it has one purpose, which is to destroy Israel, which is not funny at all. No, we don't want to see any countries get destroyed at all. But there is something kind of funny. It's like Israel has really made their own bed here. I don't want Israel to be destroyed, but they are committing a genocide. But every time they do these things, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Hezbollah was created by Israel. They can say that it's funded by Iran, but there would be no Hezbollah if there was no Palestinian Islamic Jihad. And there'd be no Palestinian Islamic Jihad if there was never a Nakba, you know? So anyway, so Hezbollah is this huge army. I'm trying to stifle laughter. I know I shouldn't be laughing right now. But Hezbollah, they are worried about. And again, Iran says that if Israel commits this genocide, Hezbollah will open up a new front in the north. Potentially the Houthis or the Popular Mobilization Force or even Syria could get involved in the conflict as well. And that would turn this into a regional conflict. Now Israel is in a serious war, and there are echoes of these major coalition wars from the 20th century. Now Israel's fighting on several fronts. Now they're fighting in Syria, they're fighting in Lebanon, they're fighting against Iraq, they're fighting against Gaza. Now this is a major war, and they're not just bombing into submission this tiny, primitive, small army. They're also fighting serious Iranian-backed forces, as well as other governments across the region. And of course, if Iranian-backed groups in Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Yemen are attacking Israel, then Israel may attack Iran. You see how this, again, like I said, it has this ripple effect. Hamas against Israel, Israel against Hamas, then it's Hezbollah, Houthis, and Assad, and the PMF against Israel. Then it's Israel against all them, plus Iran. And then it's Iran against Israel. And if that's Iran against Israel, then it's America getting involved too. And so this brings in the United States. So I'll bring in the American perspective. So there's a few things going on with America. As I said earlier, the United States is now deploying two aircraft carriers into the region. They're also deploying F-16 fighters into nearby military installations that already exist for a total of 100 warplanes in the region. So they've got a serious number of aircraft. They've got a serious number of warships there. They're also deploying 2,000 American Marines to Israel. They say to assist with humanitarian efforts, but maybe it's for other purposes. And Joe Biden is making a visit to Israel on Wednesday. And all of that is in addition to an aid package that they're sending to Israel. So this is the story about all of that. It says, quote, President Biden plans to visit Israel on Wednesday, setting up a high-stakes trip in which the American leader will try to forestall a worsening humanitarian crisis in Gaza while preventing the war between Israel and Hamas from spreading. The announcement came amid heightened expectations of an Israeli invasion of Gaza. Biden's trip will add to his administration's efforts to head off a wider conflict, which has included diplomacy and the deployment of warships in the region in a show of military might. On Monday, U.S. officials said a rapid response force consisting of 2,000 Marines and sailors had been ordered to the eastern Mediterranean to help evacuate Americans. Israel has asked the United States for $10 billion worth of emergency aid, according to three officials familiar with the request. Lawmakers in the White House are crafting a package linking assistance for Israel with aid to Ukraine, funds to fortify the U.S.-Mexico border, and aid to Taiwan. So we're giving away a lot of money here. So the United States is putting all these assets in the region. This is what we talk about when we say that it's expanding. There's this huge mobilization of forces going on with everybody. Israel is mobilizing their forces on their border with Gaza. Hezbollah is mobilizing their forces on the border with Israel. Iran is mobilizing their militias in Iraq and Yemen against Israel. The United States is mobilizing their assets in the Eastern Med. And the United States is there. Keep in mind, they are not there to make it so that Israel backs off Hamas. They are there to make sure that Iran backs off of Israel. So Biden is making the trip there, and the aircraft carriers are there, and the Marines are there. They are not there to deter Israel's aggression against Gaza. They are there to make sure that Israel can do whatever it wants in Gaza, and Iran will be deterred from responding. Because if the United States isn't there, then maybe Iran thinks that they can win a protracted counterinsurgency against Israel. If Hezbollah and all the Iranian militias go in, and if Israel attacks Iran, and Iran is in a war with Israel, Iran thinks maybe they can win. The United States is there to say any war against Israel is a war against the United States, which Iran does not want. Maybe Israel would have a hard time defeating Hezbollah and Hamas and everybody else, but if the United States were there, it would make it a lot easier. So the United States is there as a check on Iran. And it's sort of like chess. Iran put Netanyahu in check, and now the United States is putting Iran in check so that Netanyahu is free to do whatever he'd like to do. And this is important because people think that Biden is going there to de-escalate. He isn't. And I said at the top of the show, this is maybe the most interesting development, but a memo has come out from the State Department where they have advised that the U.S. diplomatic mission and the White House are not to even use the word de-escalation specifically. And this is a story. I haven't seen this reported anywhere. But it says the State Department has warned its diplomats not to call for de-escalation or an end to violence. It says in a message circulated Friday in emails viewed by Huffington Post, the State Department said that high-level officials do not want these three phrases in press materials. And they are de-escalation and ceasefire, end to violence and bloodshed, or restoring calm. Those are three things that the State Department is saying not to say to the press. Do you understand? There, the State Department is telling the U.S. government, do not say that we want an end to violence. Do not say we want an end to bloodshed. Do not say that we want de-escalation or a ceasefire or calm in the region. And they're saying that because they don't want that. They don't want de-escalation. And the White House is echoing that. The article goes on. It says, the State Department's orders demonstrate how strongly the United States is backing Israel's onslaught despite the civilian death toll. When asked about calls for a ceasefire made by some progressive Democrats, the White House press secretary said, quote, we believe they are wrong. They're repugnant. They're disgraceful. This is in response to a question about progressive Democrats wanting a ceasefire. The White House says you're disgraceful. So make no mistake about it. Biden is not there to create a ceasefire or to force Israel to back off. Biden is going there to dissuade Iran from responding to Israel's brutality. That's why they are there. They're there to guarantee that Netanyahu can kill all these Palestinians and that Iran can't intervene. But here's the dilemma, though. Regardless of the aircraft carriers or Biden going out there, it is an overwhelming show of military might. I'm sure it's giving Iran pause. They're perhaps reconsidering whether they really would preemptively attack Israel or intervene in some way. But here's the thing. On some level, it's not entirely within the control of Iran. Because with all this bloodshed against Palestine, this is a brutal humanitarian crisis. They're literally running out of water. All these UN humanitarian sites, all these little tents that they've set up, have all run out of water. They have no water. They have no electricity. The hospitals don't have electric. They're running out of food. They have no fuel. I mean, people are literally riding donkeys to evacuate North Gaza. They're walking. Elderly, children, people that have been wounded are walking 25 miles or riding donkeys because there's no fuel. So this is, and this is the beginning. This is a taste. Because as I said, Israel is about to go in with artillery and bombs and tanks and infantry, and they're going to kill everybody that hasn't evacuated, and they're going to destroy everything that hasn't been bombed yet. The Muslims in these countries are not obviously going to like that. They're going to flip. And so in some sense, there's a question of to what extent Iran can control these groups. Is there discipline? And historically, the answer is no. There's not a lot of discipline. Countries like Saudi Arabia have a very tenuous grasp on power. I was going to say it's a powder keg. They have a tenuous grasp on power because the Muslims in these places are what they are. You know, a lot of them are uneducated. A lot of them are average, lower IQ. A lot of them are poor, and they're very young. And so when they see this humanitarian disaster unfolding, it almost becomes outside the control of these governments. They can't refrain from responding, because to do that would be for their own government to be overthrown. How can these governments like Saudi Arabia or Iran or Syria or in the leadership of Hezbollah, how could they stand by and watch as the Palestinians are slaughtered without being removed from power? They can't. And these pressures have always existed since Israel came into existence 70 years ago. That's how Jordan was dragged into the 67 war. It's because the people demanded that they go to war. And so there's this, and in some ways, this is playing into Israel's hands, because of course, Israel benefits from all this. Israel benefits from the attack by Hamas, because now they get to solve the Gaza question finally. Now they get to go in and kill them all and ethnically cleanse this region. In doing so, they know they're provoking and basically an unavoidable retaliation. There's an unavoidable reciprocal attack by these Iranian militias against Israel. And all that does is give Israel an excuse to do what they always wanted to do, which is to bomb Iran's centrifuges, which is their nuclear program. And if they do that, then Iran is in a war with Israel. And then they draw the United States into a war with Iran. And they get the crown jewel, what they always wanted, which is an end to the regime in Syria and an end to the regime in Iran. And that seems to be the big play that Israel is making. So consider the following. Israel had an intelligence failure. Oops. Number one surveillance superpower in the world, it's your neighbor. Oops, we didn't know that Hamas was going to spill out and kill al Netanyahu's political enemies in the south. The commie, you know, all these labor Zionists down in the south of Israel. Oops, we didn't see it coming. Oh, we didn't know that Hamas was going to invade. Guess we have an excuse to go and kill them all. Guess a perfect political crisis fell into Netanyahu's lap right as he was about to get removed from power and thrown in jail. Now he's forming a unity government to go and destroy his sworn enemy for 100 years. And they get to go and level Gaza. And the United States backs them and Israel backs them because of the visceral atrocities that were committed by Hamas, which they failed to anticipate. So Israel is going to conduct a brutal campaign against Gaza, which they know that Iran has to respond to. They know that Iran and all the neighboring powers have to go and attack Israel for doing this, because the people would revolt if they didn't. They bring the United States in to say, hey, we're going to put Iran in check. Iran won't attack Israel if the United States is in the neighborhood. Wrong. Iran almost has to. They're forced. And if Iran attacks Israel, if these militias attack Israel, then Israel can widen the conflict and attack Iran. America's brought in. And now Israel gets two for the price of one. This little attack by Hamas, this may be the tripwire that sets off the regional war that they have wanted for decades. It's going to draw America in, finally, to a war where they decapitate Iran and Syria. That seems to be the goal here. And here's the big problem. One, not only is this a disaster, because think about the regional crisis if Iran and Syria had no leadership. There's not a great track record for regime change in the Middle East. We decapitated Iraq and Libya, and these are two failed states. Libya still doesn't have a government. Iraq still isn't stable. Imagine we go in and there's no Iran and there's no Syria. This is 10 years, maybe longer, of rebuilding in those countries. This is millions upon millions of refugees. What's more, this is a very complicated operation. If we go to war with Iran, that's tens of thousands of Americans coming home in body bags. That's terrorism on our soil. That's a potential of dirty bombs because Iran has nuclear material. That's a big problem. And it's even further complicated by the fact that I don't know that Saudi Arabia is necessarily going to help us this time. And neither will Russia or these Central Asian countries. It's even more complicated than it would have been 15 years ago, just from a logistical point of view. So there's huge implications, and that's just if we're able to go and do our war with Iran and Syria at the behest of Israel. But then there's the chance that maybe China and Russia won't tolerate the United States taking out Iran and Syria. Maybe in the same way that we are just shipping every piece of artillery, every bullet, every missile to Ukraine, maybe Russia and China back Iran and Syria in the same way. Maybe they fund and supply the Iranian military. Maybe they fund and supply Syria. And they make it a costly, brutal war for the United States. And is the United States supposed to take that? Are they supposed to allow Russian artillery shells and anti-aircraft to blow up American tanks and planes? Of course not. America is then tempted to widen the conflict and attack Russia and China. There's going to be calls that say, if Russia supplies Iran, then we will strategically hit Russia and China. Yes, that could happen. And of course, if the United States is embroiled in Ukraine and we're preemptively shoring up Taiwan and we're at war with Iran and Syria, there's a chance that North Korea attacks South Korea. There's a chance that global chaos breaks out. This is a very dangerous situation here. And so, contrary to the State Department, the Biden administration should be using language about de-escalation. They should be using language like ceasefire and an end to the violence and all this. But that's not what they're going for. So, God help us. This all comes down to what Israel's response is going to be. Because if it's very brutal, if there's a lot of civilian casualties, if it's like what we're expecting, which is a genocide, we may be put on a track where there's no off-ramp. Nothing is inevitable. Nothing is exactly inevitable. So there's still a chance that cooler heads prevail and all of this can be averted. But if the civilian casualties are very high, it's very tricky to get an off-ramp. Once that happens, it sets in motion a chain reaction of events that will be almost impossible to stop, which I just described to you. Once Israel goes and does what they do, I mean, there is a chance that a total crisis can be averted, but there are very few off-ramps, and they're very difficult. Like I said, it sets into motion a chain reaction where even if people wanted to, they couldn't stop it. Like I said, it gets to a point where even if Iran wanted to stop the chain reaction, maybe they couldn't. Maybe Hezbollah couldn't restrain their own fighters. Maybe they couldn't restrain themselves. And if they attack Israel, then the United States can't. I mean, they just simply cannot refrain from retaliating. There are no good options at that point. And if the United States responds and we're in a full-blown war with Iran, then Russia and China are, they're forced to respond in a reciprocal way. Again, it's another chain. It's another link. And the point is that as time goes on and as the humanitarian situation worsens, everybody's horizon of options narrows. The horizon of possible outcomes narrows like this. Every civilian that gets killed, as long as the humanitarian thing goes on, everybody's ability to act narrows. And there become fewer and fewer and worse options that we're all constrained to. Right up to a global world war, like a global nuclear war. And it's all, and it all comes back to Israel. If we had, and by the way, I'm going to end with this because this is a long show. It's like hour and 40 minutes already. Here's the last thing I'll say. If we had an America First media, then we could avoid this. You know, Biden would be there to yank Israel's leash and say, back off, or we're going to let you die over there. You know, we would say, back off. You know, you can't kill all these Palestinians. We would be admonishing them. You know, it would be a real, there would be some real chance that we could change Israel's behavior here. But because we have this media that is slavishly pro-Israel, because MSNBC is firing all their pro-Palestinian contributors and all their coverage is wall-to-wall Zionist Jews newscasters talking about dead Jews and, you know, if you support Hamas, you're a terrorist. Because we have wall-to-wall Zio media, because the government's controlled by Zionists, we can't pull them back. And by the way, even if we could, Israel has a nuclear arsenal. And that's what all these hysterical Zionists in the media are now saying. Mark Levin and Shapiro have both said that if America doesn't help Israel, Israel will nuke Gaza. That's literally what they're saying. They're saying, look, if the United States doesn't support Israel, Israel's not going to lay down and die. We will nuke Iran. We have a nuclear arsenal. We don't tell anybody about it. We will dust it off and we will nuke Iran and we will nuke Syria. And, you know, that's nuclear blackmail. And Shapiro and Levin are like Zionist spies. No doubt they're in touch with Netanyahu. We know that about Shapiro. And I'm sure the same is true of Levin. And so the message is this. The United States has to come in and co-sign Israel's atrocity, or Israel will nuke Iran and start a nuclear war. Which is just like so evil. But they have a checkmate against us because they have infiltrated our government. They have totally penetrated American society. That's how they were able to acquire a nuclear capability. And they've created the situation where nobody can resist Israel because Iraq is gone and Libya is gone and Egypt has been neutralized and Syria has been neutralized. And the media is controlled, so we couldn't even get the message out if we wanted to, because Elon Musk is on a Twitter space with the president of Israel and 10 rabbis and Ben Shapiro 2 weeks before this happens. So it's a checkmate. All we can do is pray that God foils the Jews' plans. That's literally it. And so I think tomorrow I'm going to be doing this. You know, Pope Francis has called for a day of fasting and prayer for peace in Palestine. So I'm going to put the details out tomorrow morning, but I'd like to do a Twitter space tomorrow and do a rosary, and we'll remind everybody to fast, because that's literally all we can, that's all the stupid goyim can do. They got a checkmate. Congratulations, the perfidious Jews have gotten a checkmate against us. They've got a nuclear arsenal. They got all the key media positions. So, I mean, either way, we're fucked. I mean, if we don't go to war with Iran and go to war with Russia and China, they're going to nuke Iran. And if they don't nuke Iran, we're in a world war. And they control all the media, so they're going to get this message out to us. And, you know, they got Elon, they got Fox, they got all of it. So, but here's our checkmate. We're going to go to God. Our checkmate. Here's our checkmate, is we're Christians. We have access to God. They have access to the devil. We have access to God. And so what we'll do is we will appeal to the highest authority, which is God, and pray for a divine intervention. Because no joke, that's literally what it's going to take to stop these people from dragging us into a nuclear apocalypse.